He was alone when he took the hook to the final row of ice, lifting and moving until the blocks were even in a perfect wall, topping 7 feet. This exertion, on top of the rest of the days, was a great deal, and his breath was harsh and labored by the end of his task. He moved slowly to the door, collecting the lantern, and let himself out of the hold, setting the lamp to the floor and closing the interior steel door behind him, eager to work the locks quickly and be rid of the darkness. As though he'd ever be rid of the darkness now. Before he'd even touched the first lock, a voice sounded from it.
Where is she?
Devril spun to face Ewan in the shadows.
How did you get in here?
His brother came closer into the dim light of the lantern, fair-haired and tall and broad, too broad to be an aristocrat. It was a miracle no one had noticed his lack of refinement, a mark of his base-born mother, though Devril imagined the aristocracy saw what they wished to see. Ewan ignored the question, repeated his own.
Where is she? I'll gut you if you've hurt another one of my men.
Another one, the Duke said, all innocence.
It's you, isn't it, thieving our shipments? Why would you think that? The toff on the docks watching our ships, the timing. Thefts began just before you announced your return. And now, here you are. What, is it not enough that you threatened our lives, yet to come for our livelihood as well?
Ewan leaned back against the wall of the dark tunnel.
I never came for your lives. Bollocks! Even if I didn't remember the last night at the manor house, when you came at us with a blade sharp enough to end us, you've been coming for us for years. We met the spies, Ewan. We ran them off. We raised a generation in the rookery on one single rule. No one talks about the bastards.
Silver flashed, and Devil's gaze flickered to his brother's hand, where he held Devil's walking stick. His heart began to pound, and he forced a laugh.
You think to silence me? You think you're still the killer among us? I've 20 years in the rookeries on you, Toff.
Ewan's lips flattened. Devil pressed on.
But even if there were a chance of you taking me, you wouldn't. And why is that? For the same reason you let us escape all those years ago. Because if you kill me, you'll never know what happened to Grace.
Nothing changed in the Duke at the words, not the cadence of his breath or the straightness of his spine. But Devil did not need proof that he'd struck true. There had been a time when he'd known Ewan like he knew himself. And he still did. They were plaited together, the three of them, the four of them.
I found you, Ewan said finally.
The words sent a chill through Devil that rivaled the ice hold.
Yes, but not her. You made a mistake, Dev.
He'd made a dozen of them, and this consequence was nothing compared to the others.
You should have been more careful with Felicity Faircloth.
Tell me something true.
I heard she hit you.
Ewan raised a hand to his cheek.
She wasn't happy to discover my ulterior motives. Nor mine.
I would have given you 1,000 nights, and all you had to do was ask.
I told her she should have been with us at the manor.
The country house where they'd been trained and tested, where Ewan had won his title and their father had won his heir. If she'd been at the manor, Devil would never have survived it. He would have been too busy protecting Felicity to protect himself. He shook his head.
I wouldn't wish her anywhere near the manor. I'd take death before she witnessed a moment of what we suffered. I don't know how you live there. I would have burned it to the ground.
I consider it every day, Ewan replied, all calm.
Perhaps one day I shall do it.
Devil watched him for a long moment. Ewan had always been like this, settled and assessing, as though he simply did not feel the emotions made for the rest of the world, as though he found them interesting, in the vague way one found a cabinet of curiosities, so. Grace had been the only person able to make Ewan feel, and even then, he'd nearly killed her. Nothing stood between Ewan and what he wanted. Nothing but Devil, it seemed. Always Devil.
I'm not the one thieving your cargo, Ewan said after a bit, the change of topic not remotely out of character.
Devil believed him. After all, Everything was out in the open now, and no one had reason to lie.
Earl Cheadle is thieving your cargo.
Devil's brows rose. He wasn't sure he believed the words, but Ewan had little reason to lie.
It didn't occur to you to do something about it. We're all criminals in some way or another, Devon, Ewan said simply. And besides, your drink is not what I'm after. No, you're after something far more valuable, the impossible. She's all I've ever been after, Ewan said. And Felicity Faircloth served her purpose to get me here, close enough to find her. I will say Lady Felicity was convenient, even more convenient than I imagined she would be, once I realized that you cared for her.
The words enraged Devil. Felicity was more than convenient. She was more than a pawn.
How dare you manipulate her to get to me?
Ewan raised a blonde brow in his direction.
Say that again. This time more slowly.
Devil swore. Yes, he had used Felicity. At the beginning, for a heartbeat, before he'd realized. The moment he'd sent her into the ballroom, a message to Ewan, he'd lost all will to follow through with his plan. He'd floundered, and he'd fallen.
The problem is, Devon, Felicity Faircloth isn't only convenient. She is also too smart for her own good. And she knows our secret.
Devil stiffened, the words and their meaning ringing clear as a rifle's report in the darkness. He resisted the urge to wrap his hands around his brother's throat and end this now.
And now we get to it. We should have killed you when we had a chance. You know, brother, most days I wish you had done just that. But you're the one who always liked the deals, Devon. If there was a bargain to be had, you were the one to have it.
Not for her. Felicity was too important to bargain with.
You touch her, you die. That is the only deal that matters.
Ewan looked down the corridor into the darkness.
I'm surprised you found it in you to love someone, Dev. What with how certain you once were that the emotion was a fable.
On another's lips, the words might have been caustic, or they might have been kind. But on Ewan's, they were curious, as though Devil were a specimen under glass.
Ewan continued. Tell me, when did you realize it? When I kissed her on the balcony at the ball? In her golden dress? That was a cruel touch, by the way.
Devil hated the revelation that Ewan had been manipulating him as well.
Just a reminder that you were never enough for Grace, that you never kept your promises to her.
The Duke's gaze narrowed.
Or was it when the boy in the hedge came back to report that I'd kissed Felicity in the gardens? Was that when you realized you loved her?
He paused.
She loved you by then, you know, and I think you loved her too, what with the speed with which you came to claim her.
The words stung, and they were enraging, because it seemed a betrayal of the worst kind that the Duke of Marwick knew that Devil loved Felicity when she did not, when she would never know, because if he told her, he might not be able to resist what she did next, and she would never get the life she deserved.
If only you decided to love her from the start, instead of manipulating her to punish me, perhaps we would have avoided all this. Think very carefully before you threaten Felicity, bruv.
The Duke's eyes found Devil, all calm.
Why should I do that? Because I won't hesitate to destroy you in her name. There is nothing you would not do for her, is there?
Devil shook his head.
Not one thing. I would happily give up everything for her happiness. I'll see the gallows for killing a duke without a second thought. The deal is simple, Devon. You tell me where I can find Grace, and I shan't punish Felicity Faircloth for knowing what she should not know. Even better, I shan't simply let her live. I'll let her end our ruined engagement. I'll settle the money on her barely there father, on the brother, too. I'll leave her better than I found her. Far better than she could be with you.
Rage rioted through Devil at the cold words, at the idea of Ewan anywhere near Felicity. Felicity, his fairy tale princess. His brother pressed on.
Magnanimous of me, don't you think?
He paused.
But if you do not give me Grace, I have no choice but to punish her. And you? I'll force the marriage. I'll take the girl to the country, somewhere you'll never get to her. And I'll make certain that you never see her again.
Devil stiffened, forced himself to raise a brow.
You think there's anywhere I can't find you? I've spent years in the darkness, Ewan, while you've gone soft in the light.
A long silence, and then a simple,
come for her, then. But if you get near, no, I take things from her, things she loves. Every glimpse you get of her will result in her deprivation of the world she's only recently come to revel in. Never forget that I learned your punishment from our father.
Memory flashed. Coming out of the dark ground, eyes red from a night of crying for the dog his father had taken from him, to find Ewan on the lawn of the manor house, playing with his own. Ewan, who had always chosen his future over their shared past. The perfect heir.
You're a fucking monster, just like him.
Ewan did not move.
Perhaps. But you brought the girl into this, didn't you? You put her on the table as a weapon. I'm simply using her.
Devil had had enough. He threw himself across the dark hallway, fist already raised, the full weight of his body behind the blow, which connected with the wicked sound of bone on flesh. The Duke's head snapped back, the movement broken by the stone wall at his back.
You think you can threaten her?
Ewan recovered with unbearable speed, landing his own heavy blow, sending breathtaking pain radiating out from Devil's eye. Devil was already pulling his brother off the wall to deliver a series of blows in quick succession.
You think I won't leave you here to rot in this muck? I've done everything to keep her from. I've given up my only chance at happiness to keep her from this, from my past, from yours, you fucking cur.
Ewan's eyes opened, unmoved.
And what would you do to find her if she was lost?
Anything. Breathing heavily, Devil threw his bleeding brother to the ground and backed away from his brother's body. At the door to the hold, he searched his pocket for his keys.
Where is she?
Ewan had pushed himself up to a seated position, back against the wall, face in the shadows, black blood running down his chin.
I've spent 12 years looking for you, and when I hear about you, about the bastards, it's only ever about you and Wit. No women, no wives, no sister. Where is she?
He could hear the anguish in his brother's words, and for a moment, for a heartbeat, Devil considered telling him the truth. He would follow Felicity from the shadows for the rest of time. He would watch her marry and grow old. He would watch her have children, little brown-haired lockpicks, who were more than they seemed. And if he couldn't find her, he'd no doubt grow as mad as his brother without the woman he loved. But 1,000 years ago, when 3 children escaped their horrible past and made for a bright future, they'd done so because of the man in front of them, because he'd betrayed them brutally. Devil Scar throbbed with the memory. And today, Devil meted out punishment with unmatched swiftness.
You tried to kill her, Ewan, our father's last test, and you were the one to take up the blade.
Ewan looked away.
She's the proof of your theft. You stole a dukedom. But worse, you stole her name.
Ewan turned to him wild-eyed.
She never wanted it. You stole it anyway, Devil said. We were children, but you two were always older by years. You were bound to each other. I loved her.
Devil knew that. Ewan and Grace had been too young for love, and still they'd had it, which had made what happened even worse.
Then you should have protected her. I did. I let her run with you.
Devil turned his face, showing his scar, to Ewan.
Only after I stopped you from destroying her. You think I don't remember? You think I don't still feel the burn of your blade?
Punishment and protection, 2 sides of the same coin. Had he not learned that lesson for himself? Had he not punished himself to protect Grace all those years ago? Hadn't he just punished himself again to protect Felicity? Would he not take his punishment again and again for her safety? And now he would punish Ewan.
Grace is gone.
The lie rang through the darkness, clear and cold. And for the first time since he appeared, the Duke showed himself.
Ewan's inhale was loud and harsh, as though Devil had unsheathed his cane sword and put the tip right through his heart.
And he had.
Where you'll never find her. Tell me.
Ewan's low voice shook.
Devil watched his brother carefully and threw his final blow.
Where none of us can find her.
Let Ewan think Grace dead. She'd be furious at Devil for it, no doubt, but if it threw the fucking monster off her scent, he'd take his sister's heat. And besides, Ewan deserved the pain. Devil would sleep well tonight. Except he wouldn't, because he'd be without Felicity. He turned back to the locks, extracting his keys. Christ, he was tired of all of it. He was Janus, cursed with nothing but the broken past, the bleak future. And, like Janus, he could not see the present. The glint of silver from the lion's head at the tip of his walking stick came too late for him to defend himself. The blow set him to his knees, the pain excruciating.
You were to protect her!
Devil bore the weight of his pain and lied perfectly, a lie that any good smuggler would be proud of.
You were to protect her first.
Ewan roared, his fury coming without warning.
You took her from me!
The room was spinning.
She came willingly. She came eagerly. You have signed your death warrant tonight, brother. If I must live without love, you can die without it.
The words were a harsher blow than the physical one Ewan had delivered. Felicity. Devil was fast losing consciousness. He lifted a hand to his temple, feeling the telltale warm wetness there. Blood. Felicity. He didn't want to die without her. Not without seeing her again. Not without touching her, without feeling the soft warmth of her. Not without one last kiss. Not without telling her something true. Felicity. Not without telling her he loved her. He should have told her he loved her. He would have married her. He did marry her. A scrape of steel sounded harsh and somehow unfamiliar. No. No, he didn't. He left her. He married her. It was a wild Covent Garden wedding with a fiddle and a pipe, and too much wine and too much song, and he told her he loved her 100 times. 1,000. A slide. His body dragged through the frigid mud into the hold. He married her, and he made her a queen of the garden, and his men swore her allegiance, and she grew round with a child. With children. With little girls, with heads for machines, just like their mother. And she didn't regret it. And neither did he. No, wait. He didn't. It wasn't past. It was future. He rolled to his hands and knees, barely able to see the flicker of lantern light in the hallway beyond. He had to get to her, to keep her safe, to love her. She had to know he loved her, that she was his light. Light. It was going away. Ewan was in the doorway.
If I must live in the dark, you can die in it.
Devil reached for the door, the infinite blackness of the hold already stealing his breath. No, not the blackness.
Felicity!
The door shut, closing out the light.
No!
The only response was the ominous sound of locks being thrown. One after another, locking him into the hold.
Felicity!
Devil screamed, fear and panic coursing through him, forcing him to fight the haze and scramble for the door. He banged on it. There was no answer.
Ewan!
He screamed again, madness coming with the darkness.
Please!
He threw himself at the door, pounding upon it, knowing that the hold was too far down and too well hidden for any of the watchmen outside to hear him. And still he screamed, desperate to get to Felicity, to keep her safe. He turned, darkness everywhere, feeling along the muddy ground until he found the ice, pulling himself up on the blocks to find the pick he'd left within.
The dark closed in on him, heavy and clawing in the freezing cold, and he forced himself to take deep breaths as he surged.
Where the fuck is it?
He found it, and taking it by the handle and crawling back to the door, he roared her name again.
Felicity!
But she wasn't there to hear him. He'd pushed her away. I love you, devil. He pulled himself to standing and swung the hook, scarring the steel. And again, he had to get to her. Again, he had to keep her safe. Again. Do you love me? He did. He loved her. And in that moment, as he realized the futility of his blows, he was overcome with truth. He would never have the chance to tell her just how much. You deserve the darkness. The final strike took the remains of his strength, and he sank to the ground and closed his eyes, letting the darkness and cold come. Chapter 27. Unable to sleep, Felicity rose at the crack of dawn and went to her brother's home, letting herself in through the kitchens and up into the family's quarters, opening the door to his bedchamber to discover him still abed, kissing his wife. She immediately turned her back and raised a hand to her eyes, crying out, "Ah, why?" While it wasn't the kindest response to the vision of marital bliss before her, it was certainly more kind than other things she might have thought or said, and it got the job done. Prue gave a little surprised squeak, and Arthur said, "Damn it, Felicity, are you unable to knock?" "I didn't expect..." She waved a hand. She looked back to find her sister-in-law sitting up in the bed, counterpane pulled to her chin. Returning her attention to the door, she added, "Hello, Prue." "Hello, Felicity," Prue said, a smile in her voice. "It's lovely to see you." "And you! I hear you've a great deal going on." Felicity grimaced. "Yes, I suppose you would have heard that."
"Enough," Arthur said. "I'm putting locks on all the doors."
"We have locks on all the doors, Arthur."
"I'm putting more locks on the doors and using them. Two people bursting into our private rooms uninvited in less than a day is two people too many. You may turn around, Felicity."
She did, to discover that both her brother and sister-in-law had donned dressing gowns. Prue, heavy with child, was crossing the room to a pretty dressing table, and Arthur was standing at the end of the bed, looking not pleased. "I was invited," she defended herself. "I was summoned. Felicity, come and see me immediately." One would think you were king for how superior a summons it was.
"I didn't expect you to think you were summoned for this hour."
"I couldn't sleep." She didn't expect to be able to sleep ever again, honestly, for the moment she began to dream it was of Devil, the king of Covent Garden, and the way he looked at her, and the way he touched her, and the way he might love her, and just when it all felt so deliciously real, she woke, and it was all horribly false, and so not sleeping seemed a better alternative. "I intended to come and see you today, Arthur. I was going to come and apologize. I know it's dreadful, and Father has disappeared, and Mother is in a constant state of vapors, but I've been thinking about what happened two nights ago, and..." "Wait, someone else burst into your rooms?" His brows rose.
"I wondered when you would note that."
He sighed.
"I am unconcerned about what happened at the Northumberland Ball."
Felicity sighed. "Well, you should be concerned, Arthur. It was not my best moment. I'm properly ruined." He barked a laugh at that.
"I can imagine."
"I rather think it might have been your best moment, honestly," Prue said happily from her dressing table. "Marwick sounds quite unpleasant."
"He is," Felicity said.
"Mostly, but..." She stopped herself before she could point out that her decision, however freeing for herself, was the opposite for her father and Arthur, who now had no hope for recovering their losses. If Arthur still hadn't told Prue, it would be a terrible betrayal of her brother, even if he deserved it. She looked at him, the question in her eyes.
"She knows," he said.
Felicity looked to Prue. "You do? That this idiot man was keeping the truth about his own ruin from us both?" In fact, I do. Felicity's jaw dropped. She never expected her sister-in-law to weep and wail in the face of financial disaster, but she also did not expect her to be so, well, frankly, happy. She looked to her brother. Something has happened. Her brother watched her for a long moment.
Indeed, something has.
Was it possible the Duke was not allowing the engagement to end? He was just mad enough to do it, just to punish Devil. And as much as Felicity was irritated with Devil, and hurt by Devil, she was not interested in punishing him.
I'm not marrying Marwick. I made that very clear at the ball, and even if he came to...
I've no interest in you marrying Marwick, Felicity. Frankly, I despise the idea from the start. Similarly, I have little interest in discussing the ball. I should like to talk about what happened after the ball.
Felicity froze. Impossible.
Nothing happened after the ball.
That's not what we were told.
Felicity looked to Prue, then back to Arthur, a thread of suspicion in her.
Who burst into your rooms before me?
I think you know.
She went cold.
He shouldn't have come here. He'd used her. He'd betrayed her.
You were the perfect revenge.
He'd done enough damage. Couldn't he leave well enough alone?
Nevertheless, Arthur said, he turned up here yesterday.
He isn't important, she lied.
Arthur raised a brow.
He seems quite important, if you ask me, Prue interjected.
No one asked you, Prue.
What did he say? Felicity asked.
He wouldn't have told Arthur the truth about the night on the roof, certainly. That ran the risk of landing him with her for a wife, and Lord knew he wasn't willing to risk that for anything. Lord knew he wasn't willing to even consider her for a wife.
He said a number of things, as a matter of fact.
Arthur looked to Prue.
Introduced himself all polite, despite the fact that he'd climbed a tree and broken in.
He does that, Felicity said.
Does he? Prue asked, as though they were discussing Devil's penchant for riding.
We're going to have a talk about how you know that, eventually, Arthur said. He then tore a strip off of me for mistreating you.
Her gaze flew to her brother's.
He did.
He did. Reminded me that you were never a means to an end, that we were treating you abominably and that we didn't deserve you.
Tears welled, along with anger and frustration. He too didn't deserve her.
He shouldn't have done that either.
He does not seem the kind of man who can be stopped, Felicity, Prue said.
Especially when you want to stop him from leaving you.
He was right, is the thing, Arthur said. We did behave abominably. He thinks you ought to turn your backs on us. Thinks we are unworthy of you.
He doesn't really believe that.
Her worth had run its course the moment her usefulness and his revenge had done the same.
For someone who doesn't believe in your worth, he certainly was willing to pay a fortune for it.
She froze, instantly understanding.
He offered you money.
Arthur shook his head.
Not just money, a king's ransom, and not just to me, to father as well. A hefty sum to fill the coffers, to begin again.
She shook her head. Taking Devil's money tied them together again. He could turn up any time to check on his investments. She didn't want him near her. She couldn't bear him near her.
You can't take it.
Arthur blinked. Why ever not?
Because you can't, she insisted. Because he's only doing it because he feels some kind of guilt.
Well, one might argue that a guilty man's money spends as well as that of someone who sleeps well at night. But leaving that aside, why would Mr. Culm feel guilty, Felicity?
Mr. Culm. The name sounded ridiculous on her brother's tongue. Devil had never used it before with her. He loved being the opposite of a mister with a powerful passion. And also, Mr. Culm made her remember when she wished she was his missus, which she didn't anymore, obviously.
Because he does, she settled on as an answer. Because,
she trailed off.
I don't know, because he does.
I think he might feel guilty because of the other thing he said while he was here, Arthur.
Arthur sighed, and Felicity looked to Prue, who looked like the cat that got the cream.
What was it?
How did he put it? Prue asked with a smile that gave Felicity the keen sense that her sister-in-law had committed whatever Devil had said to memory.
Ah, yes, he loves you.
Tears came, instantly. Tears and anger and frustration and loathing that he'd said the words she longed to hear to Prudence and Arthur and not to her, the person whom he ostensibly loved. She shook her head.
No, he doesn't.
I think he might, you know, Arthur replied.
One lone tear spilled down her cheek, and she dashed it away.
No, he doesn't. You are not the only ones who treated me abominably, you know. He did, too.
Arthur nodded.
Yes, he told us that as well. He told us he'd made enough mistakes to make it impossible for him to make you happy.
She stilled.
He said that.
Prue nodded.
He said he would live with the regret for a lifetime, that he would remember the chance he'd had and lost.
Another tear. Another. Felicity sniffed and shook her head.
He didn't care enough about me.
Arthur nodded.
I shan't tell you otherwise. You must decide if he is a man worthy of you. But know that Devon Colm has bestowed a fortune upon you, Felicity.
Upon you, she corrected. So what? That I may be kept? That I may be your responsibility forever? That I may belong to you and live in sadness and silence here in this world that used to be all glitter and is now faded paint peeling from the rafters? All he's done is make my future a gilded prison.
No, Felicity, I spoke correctly. Colm bestowed a fortune upon you. He wished you to have enough to find your own happiness.
He looked to Prue.
How did he say it?
Prue sighed.
A future wherever and with whomever you wish.
Felicity's brow furrowed.
A dowry?
The bastard. He'd just thrown up another door. She'd unlocked everything and here she was again, surrounded by new chains, new locks. Arthur shook his head.
No, it's yours. The money is yours. An enormous amount, Felicity. More than you could ever spend.
The shocking words settled as Prue lifted a box from her dressing table and walked it over to Felicity.
And he left you a gift.
The money was not a gift enough.
The black onyx box, longer than it was wide, barely an inch high, and tied with a pink silk bow. Her chest tightened at the pretty package it made. Pink on black, like light on darkness, like a promise.
He was adamant you receive this when we told you of the funds.
She slipped the ribbon from the box, wrapping it carefully around her wrist, before she opened the lid to discover a thick white linen card inside. Across it, in Devil's beautiful black scrawl, were three words. Farewell, Felicity Faircloth. Her chest tightened at the words, tears springing again instantly. She hated him. He'd taken away the only thing she'd ever really wanted. Him. She lifted the card, nonetheless, and her breath caught at the glint of metal beneath. Six straight, thin lines of shining, gleaming steel, beautifully wrought. Tears came freely now, her hand shaking as she reached for the gift, her fingertips caressing the smooth metalwork.
Devil, she whispered, unable to keep his name from her tongue. They are beautiful.
Prue craned to look in the box.
What are they? Hairpins?
Yes.
What a strange design.
Felicity lifted one from the box, inspecting the jagged wave at one end. Setting it down on its black velvet cushion, the most beautiful tool chest in Christendom, she ran her finger over the L-shaped angle in another, the flat square end of a third.
They are lockpicks.
The money was one thing, but the lockpicks were everything.
You've got the future in your hands every time you hold a hairpin, he'd said all those days ago in the warehouse,
when he told her she shouldn't be ashamed of her talent. These picks were proof he knew her, that he put her desires first, her passion first, that he cared more for what she chose for herself than for his own guilt. But more than all that, they were proof that he loved her. He'd bought her freedom,
She would never again have to make choices based on Arthur's business or her mother's home or her own social standing. He'd freed her from Mayfair, from the world she no longer wanted, and he'd given her the future. Just as he had on the roof when he'd resisted her, when he told her that he wouldn't take her, that he wouldn't ruin her, that he wouldn't rob her of the future he could see, like Janus. In the moment, he'd let her choose him, and she had, without for a moment feeling ruined. And now, he'd ensured that she'd never be ruined again. He'd replenished her family's coffers and made her rich beyond measure. Rich in money and freedom. Wherever and with whomever you wish. She lifted the pins one after the other and inserted them into her hair. She didn't want the world of the aristocracy. She wanted the world. And he was the man to give it to her. Not that she wasn't prepared to take it. To no avail, Felicity banged on the great steel warehouse door a half hour later as the sun edged over the rookery's rooftops. What good was the benefit to having been given the blessing of a bare-knuckle bastard's protection in Covent Garden if one could not enter their damn warehouse when one wished? She was going to have to do it another way. She reached into her hair, pulling out one gleaming steel pin and a second, each one beautifully shaped. Devil had found a skilled artisan who understood complex lockpicking, which seemed the kind of thing that should not exist. But he specialized in things that did not exist, and so she was unsurprised as she knelt in the dirt outside the warehouse door. He'd better be within, or she was going to be very irritated that she'd stained her dress. Also, he'd better be within, because she was ready to give him a firm set-down, one he richly deserved, the bastard. After which, she intended to stay until he told her he loved her, more than once. Before she could do the job, however, a man leapt to the ground behind her.
"My lady?"
She turned to face John, the handsome, friendly man who had returned her to her home the last time she was here. "Hello, John," she said, brazening through, a bright smile on her pretty face.
"Good morning, my lady," John replied in his deep baritone. "I hope you understand that I cannot allow you to pick that lock."
"Excellent," she said. "Then shall you save me the trouble and let me in?" John's brows rose.
"I'm afraid I can't."
"But I am welcome here. I'm under his protection. He gave me free rein over Covent Garden."
"Not any longer, my lady. Now we're to return you to Mayfair if we find you. No hesitation. You ain't even to see, devil."
A tightness settled in her chest. He didn't even wish to see her again. Which, of course, was rubbish, because obviously he wished to see her. Obviously he loved her. He simply had to be convinced to tell her to her face, the foolish man. That said, this new turn of events was not ideal. Felicity tried a new tack. "I never thanked you for bringing me home that night."
"If you'll excuse me for saying so, my lady, you were too busy railing against Devil to thank me."
She pursed her lips. "I was very angry with him."
"Yes, my lady."
"It had nothing to do with you."
"No, my lady."
"He left me that night."
"Yes, my lady."
Just like he'd left her again and again. She met John's gaze. "He left me again last night." Something flickered in the man's dark eyes. Something suspiciously like pity. No, Felicity wasn't having anyone's pity. "He thinks to tell me what is good for me. I don't care for that." John smirked.
"I don't imagine you do."
"You shouldn't ever tell your wife what's good for her. Not if you know what's good for you, John." He laughed at that, deep and full. Felicity kept talking, as much to herself as to him. "He's addlepated, of course, as he's more than good enough for me. He's the best of men." She looked to John again. "He's the best of men."
"Only the bastards and Nick have keys to this lock."
John watched the rooftops for a long time. "May I convince you to at least patrol the backside of the building while I pick it, then?"
"That lock is unpickable."
She smiled. "As we become more acquainted, John, I think you'll find that I'm quite good with locks."
"I've seen you with Devil, my lady. I've no trouble believing that.
The words set her heart racing, and sadness filled his large brown eyes. He wasn't going to do it. He was too loyal to Devil to allow her in, even when he could see that her intentions were good.
"Please, John," she whispered.
"I'm sorry," he said.
A nightingale sang, and Felicity looked up at the strange sound, so unexpected here, in the yard of a rookery warehouse. When she found nothing out of the ordinary, she turned back to John, who was smiling. Her brow furrowed.
"John?" "Lady Felicity."
A growl came from above, and she looked up to see Wit coming down the side of the warehouse to land next to her.
"I am going to require trousers if I'm going to run with you lot, aren't I?"
He inclined his head.
"It's not the worst of ideas."
His tacit acceptance of her premise filled her with joy.
"I was just telling John that I love your brother quite madly."
One of Wit's black brows rose. "As a result, I fully intend to pick this unpickable lock and go in there and tell him he's cabbage-brained for not loving me back. But that will take some time, and when one decides one would like to fight for the man one loves, one likes to do it as quickly as possible, you can imagine."
"I can, but he isn't here. He's at home."
She shook her head.
"No, he isn't. I went there first."
He grunted disapprovingly.
"So you can see why I would appreciate it if you would let me in."
His brow furrowed.
"Did you knock?"
"I did."
He raised a fist and pounded a thundering knock on the door.
"And he didn't answer."
Felicity did not like the look on his face.
"No."
His key was in the lock instantly, the door opening to the cavernous warehouse in seconds. Silence and darkness greeted them.
"Devil,"
he called out. No answer. Felicity's heart dropped. Something was wrong. She turned back to John.
"Light. We need light."
The big man was already turning to fetch a lantern. Wit called after him.
"Did he leave?"
John's reply was firm and clipped.
"No one's been in or out since you lot left." "Devil!"
Wit called out. Silence. John passed Felicity a lantern, and she lifted it high.
"Devil?"
"He must have left," Wit said.
"God damn it, John. There's £100,000 worth of goods down there, and you lot are sleeping at the watch enough that you didn't see someone leave through the only damn door to the place."
"He didn't come through that door, beast," John protested.
"My men know their work, and they do it well."
Felicity stopped listening to the two men spar, heading deeper into the darkness to the far corner of the space, to where the door inset in the warehouse floor stood open, a yawning blackness below. Devil had been adamant that that door never stand open, but it being open underscored that there was something below the warehouse itself.
"Devil?"
She stood at the edge of the hole and called into the void for him. He wouldn't be down there. He hated the hold. He hated the darkness. And still, she knew he was down there. Without question. She was down into the darkness instantly, running along the long, dark tunnel, holding her lantern high, her heart in her throat.
"Devil?"
she called again. And that's when she saw it. The flash of light on the ground in front of her, the gleam of silver, the lion's head at the handle of his walking stick, the weapon, discarded on the ground, next to the door to the ice hold. She reached for the handle. Pulled. It was locked, from the outside. 6 heavy steel padlocks in a neat row. She pounded on the door in great heavy blows.
"Devil?"
No answer. More pounding.
"Devil, are you in there?"
Again, no answer.
"Devil?"
She knocked again, pressing her ear to the door, unable to hear anything over the pounding of her heart. She dropped the lantern to the ground and reached for her hairpins without hesitation. She knocked on the door again, as hard as she could, shouting,
"Devil, I am here,"
before calling for Wit and John. But she could not wait for them. Instead, she dropped to her knees and began working the locks, all the while talking to the door, hoping he would hear her.
"Don't you dare die in there, Devon Colm.
I've things to say to your face, you terrible, wonderful man."
The first lock clicked open, and she pulled it from its latch, tossing it down the corridor and immediately setting to work on the next.
"You think you can simply turn up at my brother's home and tell him you love me without telling me first? You think that is fair? It's not. And I'm going to punish you by making you tell me every minute of every hour for the rest of our lives."
The second lock came loose, and she immediately set her picks to the third, calling out,
"Devil, are you there, love?"
She banged on the door. Silence. She tossed the third lock to the side.
"I love you. Do you know that?"
She slid her picks into the fourth lock, then the fifth.
"Are you cold, my love?"
She shouted for Wit again, and John.
"I'm coming," she whispered, now on the sixth lock, feeling for the latch inside the springwork within.
This one different from the others. She scraped the tools together, whispering again.
"I'm coming."
Done. She tossed the lock to the side and opened the door, heaving the great heavy slab to the side, the air instantly colder as she revealed the inner door, another line of locks. She immediately came to her knees in the cold mud there. She couldn't even see the locks anymore. She worked them by touch, calling out to him.
"Devil, please, love, are you there?"
Her heart pounded and she refused to allow the tears to come, refused to believe she might have lost him.
"Devil, please, I'm working as fast as I can. I'm here,"
she repeated it.
"I'm here,"
again and again. And then, barely there, almost impossible to believe, she heard it. A knock, as light as butterfly's wings, as a moth's, her moth.
"Devil," she shouted, banging on the door. "I hear you. I shan't leave you. I'm never leaving you again. You'll never be rid of me."
One lock, a second, a third. Her hands were steadier than they'd ever been, the picks flying through the lockwork.
"God damn it. No one keeps eyes behind this many locks, Devil. You're definitely a smuggler. Probably a thief, too. God knows you've stolen my heart and my future. I'm here to take it back."
The lock sprang and she was on to the fourth. At this point, any of her hairpins would have been bent or broken, rendered useless. But these pins were perfect. He was perfect.
"You're going to have to marry me, you know. I'm through letting you make decisions related to our mutual happiness, because when you do, I'm only left sad, and you are left..."
She tossed aside the fourth, moved to the fifth.
"Well, locked inside ice dungeons. I assume this is the work of my former fiancé."
A pause while she discarded the fifth lock and set her picks to the last.
"Just one more, Devon. Hold on, please. I'm coming."
Click. She flung the lock away and threw the heavy latch at the bottom of the door, pulling it open with all her strength. It came with a blast of frigid air, and Devil falling through the door into her arms. She clutched him to her, and they both fell to their knees under his weight. He trembled with cold, his face pressed into the crook of her neck. He whispered one word, over and over, like a benediction.
"Felicity."
Her arms wrapped around him, desperate to hold more of him, desperate to warm him.
"Thank you for my lockpicks."
"You saved me."
He was so cold. "Always," she whispered, pressing a kiss to his cool temple.
"Always."
"Felicity," he chattered her name. "I..."
She rubbed his arms with her hands, spoke to the top of his head.
"No, don't speak. I have to get Wit."
He stiffened.
"No."
He swallowed, and she saw the struggle of it.
"It was so dark."
Tears welled.
"I know. I'll leave the lantern."
His arms turned to steel, the strength of his grip surprising and immensely comforting.
"Not the lantern. You're the light. Don't leave me."
"I can't carry you," she said. "You have to let me get Wit."
His eyes opened, dark in the dim light.
"Don't leave me ever again."
She shook her head.
"Never. But love, it is so cold here. We must warm you."
Your fire, he whispered. Your flame. I love you.
The words thundered through her, and she could not stop touching him, stop running her hands over him, fast, furiously attempting to warm him. Devil! He pulled away, his gaze finding hers.
I love you.
Her heart redoubled its pounding. Devil, I need to get you somewhere warm. Are you hurt?
I love you, he whispered again. I love you. You're my future.
Her heart pounded. He'd gone mad.
My love, there is time for that once we are above ground.
There will never be enough time, he said,
pulling her to him, his teeth chattering, his heartbeat fast and furious.
I will never be able to tell you enough.
He kissed her, his lips cold to the touch, and somehow still setting fire to her. She reached up, stroking her hand over his cheek. When he released her, it was to press his forehead to hers and whisper again,
I love you.
She could not stop the smile that came, here, in the dark, dank, frigid hold that had nearly killed this man, that also happened to be the most perfect place for him to tell her he loved her. You told my brother first.
Yes.
I'm very angry with you about that, you know.
So you said.
I'm so angry. I came to tell you how angry I am about it. The money, too. He shivered, pressing his face to her neck.
I wanted you to be free of all of it.
I don't want your money, devil.
I didn't need it anymore. It meant nothing without you.
You beautiful, ridiculous man, she said. Then why not have me instead?
Ages ago, you asked me why I chose you.
His words were slow and measured, as though it was important that she hear them.
That night, I wanted it to be because I thought you could win him, because you looked the kind of woman easily sacrificed.
She nodded. Forlorn felicity, wallflower and unfortunate.
But it wasn't, he continued. It never was. It was because I wanted you close. It was because I couldn't bear the idea of anyone having you. Anyone but me.
He pulled her close again, his cold face at the warm skin of her neck.
Christ, Felicity, I'm so sorry.
I am not. He snapped to attention.
You're not?
No, you've a lifetime to make it up to me, and I intend to be a proper devil's bride. He grinned.
I shall adore every minute of that.
I want you out of this place. I want you warm. He pulled her close, wrapping his arms about her.
I have thoughts on how you might get me warm.
He lowered his lips to hers, and she was so grateful that he was able to think of kissing in that moment that she gave herself up to it, sliding her hands up his chest to his broad shoulders and up, up to his rough-hewn jaw and into his hair, where she discovered a wet patch.
Well, this isn't what I expected to find down here.
Wit had arrived. Devil released her from the kiss.
Go away.
No, don't go away, Wit, she said. We need you.
We do not need him, Devil said,
moving to stand, sucking in a breath at the pain of the movement, making her heart ache. She moved her hand to the light, blood shining black on her fingertips. You're bleeding, she turned to Wit. He's freezing and he's bleeding. Wit immediately came forward, catching Devil's arm over his shoulder.
What the hell happened to you?
He put his fingers to his temple, wincing.
Ewan.
He reached for Felicity.
He didn't come for you.
She shook her head. Why would he? I ended our engagement. I hit him. He grinned at that.
I know, love. I'm very proud of you for that bit.
He deserved it, and more for what he's done to you.
Grace took to the rooftops last night.
Devil nodded.
I let Ewan think her dead.
He pulled her close and kissed her temple before looking to Wit.
He's furious.
Wit nodded.
He's left. The watch reported this morning. He rode out from the Mayfair house at dawn.
Devil nodded.
He'll be back. He'll want to punish us.
Wit lifted the lantern to look at Devil's face.
Christ, he knocked you good.
Felicity scowled. Never has a man needed punishment more than that one. He looked at her, then to Wit.
He received it today.
Wit grunted, seeming to understand whatever that meant. Felicity did not, however, and her temper flared. He knocked you over the head and locked you in an ice hold where you could have died. Whatever you did to him is not comparable.
That's spoken like someone who's never been desperate for the woman he loves.
She did not hesitate. Well, I've been desperate to get to the man I love, so I think I have an idea. The brothers watched her for a long moment, and then Wit said,
I like her.
Devil grinned, then winced at the movement.
As do I.
She rolled her eyes. You're bleeding from the head. There isn't time for liking me.
There will always be time for liking you, Felicity Faircloth.
With Wit's help, they moved Devil up into the warehouse and then out into the courtyard, now bright with sun. Felicity was already calling for John.
We need a hack, or something. Devil needs a surgeon immediately, and a decent one, not some lumbering fool with a bloodletting box.
Instead of moving to help, however, John rocked back on his heels, a wide smile on his face. Felicity's brow furrowed in confusion.
John, please!
And then she turned to follow the direction of his gaze, to find Devil standing perfectly still, 10 paces behind her. She flew to his side, her skirts billowing around them both.
What is it? She said, running her hands over his arms, his shoulders. Are you hurt somewhere else? Is it your head? Can you stand?
He grasped her hands in one of his and pressed a kiss to her knuckles.
Stop, love. You'll make the boys think me soft.
Wit grunted.
The boys already think you're soft when it comes to her. Only because they don't think I'm worthy of her. They know you're not worthy of her.
Felicity shook her head.
What is wrong with you both? He needs a doctor.
I need you first, he said.
What?
He was mad.
You came back for me.
Of course I did. I love you, you imbecile.
Wit coughed a laugh, and Devil pressed another kiss to her fingers.
Well, we're going to have to work on you questioning my intelligence a bit.
I don't question your intelligence, she said. I think you're brilliant, except for when you think to suggest that I don't know my own mind.
I love you, Felicity Faircloth.
She smiled. When we are married, do you intend to call me by both of my names?
Only if you ask me very nicely.
He leaned in close.
I think I've loved you since the moment I found you on that balcony, having picked the lock and found your way from the light to the darkness.
To freedom, she said softly.
That night, in your bedchamber, I jested about rescuing the princess from her tower.
You did that, she interrupted.
He shook his head.
No, love. You rescued me. You rescued me from a world without color, without light, a world without you.
He brushed a thumb over her cheek.
Beautiful, perfect Felicity. You rescued me. I wanted you from the start. It was only a matter of time before everything was second to me wanting you, to me keeping you safe, to me loving you.
Tears filled her eyes as he continued.
And all I wanted was your happiness. Mine was nothing compared to yours.
But my happiness is tied to yours, don't you see?
He nodded.
I can't give you Mayfair, Felicity. We'll never be welcome there. You'll always have gone slumming, no matter how rich we are.
He paused, lost in thought, and then said,
But I'll give you everything else, the wide world. You have only to ask.
His beautiful eyes glittered in the sunlight.
You rescued me from the past. You gave me a present, and now I wish you to promise me the future.
Yes, she whispered, unable to keep the tears from spilling over. Yes.
He stole her lips in a wicked kiss that left them both breathless, and Wit grumbled.
Find a bed, will you?
Felicity pulled away, a blush high on her cheeks, and said, Just as soon as we find a doctor. She moved to leave the yard to head for the street.
Wait, Devil said. I could swear that you insisted we marry down there, in the darkness, while you were saving my life.
She smacked.